I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Frederick Luskin, is director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Project, director of wellness education at Stanford University, and professor of clinical psychology at Sophia University. He is author of Stress Free for Good, Forgive for Good, and Forgive for Love. Luskin is renowned for teaching about the psychological and medical benefits of forgiveness. Research done by Luskin and others have confirmed that forgiveness can reduce anger, depression, and stress, while it leads to greater feelings of optimism, hope, compassion, and self-confidence. As director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Project, Luskin conducts an outgoing series of workshops and research projects that investigate the effectiveness of his forgiveness methods on a variety of populations. The Forgiveness Project has explored forgiveness therapy with people who suffer from the violence of Northern Ireland and Sierra Leone, as well as from the attacks of the World Trade Center September 11, 2001. In addition, his work has been successfully applied and researched in corporate, medical, legal, and religious settings. Luskin's work has been featured in Time, O, the Oprah Magazine, Ladies Home Journal, U.S. News and World Report, Parade, Prevention, The New York Times, The Los Angeles Times, The Chicago Tribune, USA Today, and The Wall Street Journal. Luskin is also a professor at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. He offers lectures, workshops, seminars, and training nationwide on forgiveness, stress management, and emotional competence. More information is available at thepowerofforgiveness.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Luskin, and I look forward to hearing about forgiveness. Now, first, what is forgiveness and what is it not?
Well, we have our definition from a kind of pragmatic definition from our research, which is different than you would read in the dictionary. Mm-hmm. But our forgiveness is, it's making peace when you didn't get what you want, mm-hmm. or making peace with the word no. So that's what we came up with over years of like working with people, that something in life, sometimes incredibly painful, would be exactly what somebody didn't want to have happen. Mm-hmm. So if they wanted their husband to live and the husband got murdered, or if they wanted somebody to, you know, give them a job promotion and they didn't, or if they wanted anything and the universe or the experience said no, then some people cannot deal with not getting what they want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they stay angry or feel victimized. And so we would simply reframe forgiveness as making peace with not getting what you want, so that we could take it out of the blame and drama which people would bring in relentlessly. So instead of looking at themselves when we would talk to them, they would simply repeat over and over again how awful the abuse was or how unfair it is, and all true statements, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. giving them very little room with which to grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It would have been much better to have said, why is this happening to me? What am I supposed to learn? Instead of poor me, right?
Well, what am I supposed to learn? And like, how do I cope with life when it doesn't give me exactly what I want? I mean, it's a very basic resilience question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other part of the question that you asked mm-hmm. is, what is forgiveness not? The biggest thing is, it's not the same as reconciliation. reconciliation is regaining a relationship. Forgiveness is an inner kind of healing or making peace. So you can reconcile and not make peace, and you can make peace and not reconcile. So those are separate. And the other thing that people confuse all the time is that forgiveness is not the same as condoning.
Mm-hmm.
If you condone something, you're not forgiving it. Condoning means you kind of, well, you know, blah, 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 it's okay, it's not really this bad, or I have to deal with it. Forgiveness is acknowledging that what this is was harmful and wrong through your estimation, but that you are renouncing or moving beyond your own desire for harm or and working on your own negative feelings so that you achieve peacefulness, which is very different than just condoning and either sweeping it under the rug or saying there's nothing you can do about it. Forgiveness says, I can work and heal myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. And what does the research on forgiveness say about effectiveness and mechanisms?
I mean, how does it work?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's a complex question. You know, it works on some mechanisms of efficacy. So when people are hurt or devastated, like their husband runs out on them or their boss lies to them, some of the first statements are, I can't deal with this. I can't handle this. Forgiveness is one of the ways of changing that to a more efficacious statement. I can deal with this. I am dealing with this. I can handle it. I'm strong. So there's an efficacy pathway. There's a, I would say, a physiologic pathway of limiting the stress that's caused from the constant remembrance of harm or problems that causes a lot of stress in people's bodies, like the remembering and the repositioning of this is bad, this is terrible, this is unfair.
Mm-hmm.
There's a physical pathways, and also that stress hooks in with the physical pain pathways and amplifies those pain pathways. And so forgiveness works physiologically to quiet and dampen those pathways. And I would say the last thing it works on, a mechanism of efficacy, is kind of trading negative emotion for some more positive emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That it reawakens in us the possibility of goodness.
Mm-hmm. Great.
How's that?
That's great. What are the health benefits of forgiveness?
You know, that's an interesting question, because there are health benefits of forgiveness, but some of it, I think, depends on how much the bad health or the lack of health was caused or was at least co-created by the psychological upset of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a study that showed that forgiveness lowered blood pressure in people who had hypertension but are also angry.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't lower blood pressure necessarily in people who were just hypertensive. So if you had hypertension and you were also angry, then forgiveness made an effect on the blood pressure because it diminished the anger. And that's where it gets really interesting. So there have been studies that have shown that forgiveness, again, will lower blood pressure, will reduce the experience of pain,
mm-hmm.
will help stabilize the nervous system. Or it clearly does all that, but I think it does it when there's an emotional aspect to the physical distress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you done any work with cancer patients?
Not me. I mean, yes, I've had many cancer patients come into my classes, and I've done classes for the the Stanford's Alternative Cancer Care Center. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The only more empirical work that I know from my stuff is a while ago, a researcher at the University of California at San Francisco did a group where she included one of the mechanisms that we use very strongly, the positive emotion refocusing and the heal methods, which are kind of visualization, meditation-based mm-hmm. things for mm-hmm. opening back up to positive emotion. And she did that for a group of breast cancer patients, and I think she found some very good results from that. This is 15 years ago, maybe. I can't mm-hmm. remember exactly, but I know she did it in a more controlled way. And other people have used these kind of practices in with cancer patients. I just don't know that there's good research on mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned pain, and pain is one of the big problems I've found with cancer patients. And most of the natural things that they talk about, I have shared with cancer patients that get in touch with me, and it just doesn't work, especially if it has metastasized to the bone. It's almost impossible to deal with that pain.
So that was my experience when I did hospice work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, personally, it scared the heck out of me mm-hmm. that I was young, and I remember going in and seeing a patient who the cancer had spread into their bones mm-hmm. and just touching the bed caused them agony. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself, God, what kind of universe do we live in
right.
that has right. that much suffering in it? At that age, I didn't know how to hold that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a man that I had been working with for about a year. He was a disabled veteran, and he had stage 4 lung cancer. And he was using the same protocol that I used, the Laetril and the pancreatic enzymes and all. And he was doing very well, and we were following with the Novato urine test. And it was slowly coming down. And then he went out to shovel snow. He lived in the further north, and he broke his arm, and the pain
ouch.
Was just unbearable. And so he went into the hospital, and they did radiation for the pain and got pneumonia while he was in the hospital, and he didn't live very long after that. He told me that, and his wife told me that he thought that had he not had the hospital experience, that he would have made it, but he just couldn't do it because of the pain. So it was
wow.
very sad to see this happen.
One of the things that I'm learning a little more about, I do some work with a spine surgeon
mm-hmm.
who does work with chronic pain without surgery, and he believes that forgiveness is a central part of some resolution of chronic pain
mm-hmm.
because the pain pathways in the brain, the emotional pain and the physical pain pathways have a lot of linkages, and when they're both inflamed, that they amplify each other, that mm-hmm. the signals from one amplify the other. And once it becomes chronic and stimulated by little more than nothing, just it's chronically stimulated, that it often requires some work on the emotional mm-hmm. aspect mm-hmm. before the physical aspect will resolve.
Oh, mm-hmm. I know Dr. Esslinger at the Reno Integrative Center told me that part of his whole protocol is an emotional assessment and emotional interventions if needed. But I didn't think at the time to ask him about the pain aspect. So that may be, partly why he's using that emotional assessment.
He told me a remarkable story. I mean, we've been working together for a few years, of a woman who came in needing spine surgery, but one of the problems with spine surgery is if you're in a, you know, if you're a wreck emotionally, it's very hard for the spinal surgery to be successful. I mean, you can't have that much adrenaline and all sorts of things all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And so he remembers just a patient who had come back and told him, I need surgery. And he told her, you know, you have to start sleeping. So here's some sleeping pills. Like, you need to quiet down the arousal before the surgery will be of any success. And gave her my book on forgiveness and just said, please. Like, and he didn't hear from her for about 6 to 8 months or something. And then she came back, you know, walking again, not perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, he said to her, what changed? She said, well, you know, I realized that I had so much forgiveness that was needed that the minute I started doing that, like some of the just unimaginable, whatever it was, tension and outrage in me diminished and my pain diminished. And again, that's the forgiveness piece that has something to do with some of the physical suffering. I think that's a valuable component because I don't think many people recognize how their body adapts to the mental toxicity that they have.
Mm-hmm. 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 Then, Dr. Luskin, do you have some stories on individuals who have, some more stories on individuals who have worked with forgiveness and had very moving outcomes as a result of giving up some of the negativity in their body?
Of course. I mean, that the whole, you know, you can go on the web and find so many remarkable stories about the power of forgiveness. I remember one woman attended a class series that I did quite a while ago, and she had told me that she and her husband were completely at odds, and they were about to divorce, and they were riding together on a motorcycle that crashed, and he was impacted by the crash in a way that really created brain damage for him. And for her, I think her hip hurt. I mean, she had some pain, but nothing like the impact on him.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that she had been with him, and they were arguing as he was driving, so his argument and negativity helped cause the accident. And they were just at a terrible place. And she came into a class of mine maybe a couple of years later and had really never thought of forgiveness. I mean, that's the pain of it, is that people don't think about it, so they don't try it. And then, you know, I do my little thing. I mean, it's nothing so brilliant. And by the end of the quarter, she was in a totally different place, and a lot of her pain had resolved because she recognized that, you know, one, she chose to be on that motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody forced her.
Mm-hmm.
And two, she didn't have to hate her husband, that he was suffering a lot already, and she could work on her own suffering by releasing him. And, I mean, a good degree, I don't know if all of her chronic pain resolved because she wasn't fighting her own life so furiously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that one really struck me very powerfully because you know, I wasn't that much. I had just started in the business, and
mm-hmm.
I had no idea what the effect of this was.
Mm-hmm. Good. Do you have others?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will. And this isn't from me, but I can give you one that was very powerful. I just went to Salt Lake City, I'm going to say 3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
to see the premiere of a movie called Just Let Go. And this movie was about a Salt Lake City man whose wife and three children, I believe, were killed by a drunk driver. And they were driving back from getting, like, ice cream or something, and the other driver was, like, 17-year-old kid who had just had too much to drink and lost control completely and smashed into them and killed the wife immediately and two children and the unborn child that the wife was carrying. And he and his young son were on the other side of the car, and they were spared. And the hell he went through until, I don't know, 6 months or a year later, he wrestled with whatever demons he had and accepted the fact that he was a religious person and forgave this young man and even spoke at a hearing as to whether this young man should be tried as a juvenile or an adult, said, you know, please try him as a juvenile because if he's tried as an adult, he's definitely guilty, but his life will be over. If he's tried as a juvenile, he'll be released at 21, and so there's at least a chance for something good to happen. And he got, you know, negative feedback from his family and stuff, but he stuck to his guns, and now he's free and clean and in contact with the kid who did it. And, you know, he feels, he knows that he got his life back because of this. And it's a very powerful story, and the movie is a wonderful movie. And, you know, I do hear stuff like that all the time, but I'm going to say to you that I don't think that's the most important use of forgiveness. I think by far and away the most important use of forgiveness is for current relationships to make sure they last and prosper. So, like, if I look at marriage or, you know, parents and children or brothers and sisters or important coworkers, people do stuff all the time that piss us off, you know, like it's just, that's just life. And accumulating those resentments is one of the reasons I see that marriages don't last. And, you know, I think we're, because we're so self-centered in some level in our culture, we're very good at accumulating resentments. We got lots of them. And I think that's the most pressing need for forgiveness is to bring it into current important relationships where you don't minimize your pain, but you don't allow the negativity or the grievances or the wounds to bring down relationships that probably should remain, but also acknowledge that there's a lot of hurt. So that's where my focus is now, is in the daily interactions with people that are important to you.
Now, can you tell us more about the process you mentioned that, as I understood it, that you try to get them to move from negative to a positive, and that you use visualization, affirmations, and things like that? Can you tell us a little bit more about that process?
And, you know, I've written probably the most successful forgiveness book, self-help book out there called Forgive for Good. It sold a good number of copies, and it's a wonderful self-help book for going through all this. And I've also written one called Forgive for Love about how to do this in intimate partnership. But the basic, again, this is all so simple, Carl. I'm almost embarrassed sometimes to say it. We just tried to take the straightest line between 2 points. You know, it's like,
well, that's
you go
good.
From point A to point B and don't stop anywhere else. And so we saw that people were overwrought when they were angry. So we said, calm down. Like, you know, don't necessarily get so carried away by what you're saying. Just calm down. So we put meditation and breathing and some visualization right up front. Like, you know, you have to calm your nervous system down before you can do anything else. So that was one simple approach. Two, you need to look for the good in your life because you're probably over-focused on what's not good. Very simple. Two. Three, the whole field of cognitive behavioral therapy is about arguing with your expectations and your demandingness and, you know, the whiny, self-entitled stuff that we do. So there are very simple strategies like Byron Katie's, you know, just talk yourself down from your own upset. And last, change the story that you're telling. Stop making that story primarily of poor you and a victim. Mm-hmm. And experiment with much more healthy, successful stories. And those four things, those very, very simple, straightforward things, none of which we created, mm-hmm. we turn towards forgiveness, and they flat out work. Mm-hmm. They just flat out work.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good.
So that's my simple, I'm again, mm-hmm. I wander around, you know, I have a PhD from Stanford, and I've taught at Stanford's medical school, and I wander around telling people, you know, this is basically everything you needed to know you learned in kindergarten.
And are you involved in some research right now, Dr. Luskin?
I don't think so. It's the last research that I did was like field research, like mm-hmm. going out and measuring the effect of forgiveness on populations.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, for the method that I use, the Stanford Forgiveness Project methods,
mm-hmm.
I believe we have enough data to work. Do we know everything about it? No. Can I give you all the mechanisms? No. But I have enough outcomes from, you know, people with high blood pressure, people whose families were murdered, financial advisors after a stock market crash, general people, you know, hundreds of them from all sorts of different walks of life. There's enough general information that we have something that works to help people forgive. So the research I personally didn't need more of. I did mm-hmm. it for about, I'm going to say, a decade. Mm-hmm. Give or take, but it's not, I don't need to prove that to me myself anymore. If I did another big, like, project where we were taking catastrophes, you know, like we went into Northern Ireland and we've gone into Sierra Leone, I would definitely want to research that because of how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
But getting money for that kind of research was almost impossible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just not like you and I had a conversation before about, you know, the difference between expensive cancer drugs and other forms of therapy. There's very little money to be made on teaching people to forgive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Then, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your books and how the listeners can reach you?
The thing that is, here's the two things, the takeaways that I developed all, you know, 15, mm-hmm. 20 years ago when I started this, was one, forgiveness is good for you. You know, you touched on it a little, the physical benefits, but it's good for people emotionally, it's good for people physically. It's good for people's relationships, so it's good for you. The other piece that is just as important is that it's a teachable skill. It's a learnable skill,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably the most important takeaway, that you can use a book like mine or other books that have been shown to work, and you can do something that used to be limited to, like, kind of religious and esoteric stuff, and now you can just say, hey, this is a skill. I can practice it. When I get better on it, it'll be easier for me to do, and it'll be a good skill to have in my toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most important takeaway.
Great. Good. Then, Fred, would you tell us about your books and if you have services and any products and how the listeners can reach you?
I don't sell anything. I mean, I give... People invite me all mm-hmm. over the place to give workshops and talks, and mm-hmm. so, you know, that I'm open to do. I've written two books. They're both available anywhere. You know, Amazon's the easiest place on forgiveness. Forgive for Good and Forgive for Love. I've also written a book that emerged from our work at Stanford's Medical School on stress called Stress Free for Good. They're all just simple self-help books on how to do this stuff, and they all emerge from work done, you know, at a major medical school.
And do you have a website?
Yeah, Learning to Forgive, www.learningtoforgive.com.
Great. Good. Well, I appreciate this very much. It's interesting, and it's something that I think is very valuable for people to be aware of. I'm sure that there are people that aren't aware of this whole concept of forgiveness and that are walking around half there, and there's no need to be that way. So I'm happy to have this.
And Carl, one other thing. I mean, I know you do work, you know, with cancer patients and stuff. Probably a percentage of what I do in every class or workshop is dealing with the misconceptions that people have. So they think that if I forgive somebody, or I have to, like, go back and hug them, and you don't have to do that. And they think if I forgive somebody, I can't still sue them for child support. You know what I'm saying? And that's ridiculous. But the other piece that they think is, if I forgive somehow, I'm going to forget what happened or dishonor somebody's memory. And this is probably a good place to stop this. Like, forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting, but it means remembering things differently so that you don't have to drive yourself crazy all the time moving forward. That the remembering differently allows some peace and healing to come in.
Great. Good. I appreciate that. So, again, I thank you so much for spending some time with me and with my listeners.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
My second guest, Tara and Steve Mann, are co-founder, CEO, and president of Cancer Crackdown, a 501c3 nonprofit organization to help fighters take their battle with cancer to the next level. They fight alongside those battling this disease and develop plans and help fighters and survivors to be successful in reaching their overall health goals. They offer a wide variety of resources and encouragement for those fighting, those surviving, and those that wish to prevent the disease. Their message is to be the trusted source of knowledge regarding natural therapies to defeat cancer and remain cancer-free. They partner with fighters and survivors by supporting and navigating them through their battle together and develop a unique plan that is specific to each individual. Cancer Crackdown started as a small group on Facebook in January 2012 with a few people who wanted to share information on tips and best practices during chemotherapy. It has grown and now serves cancer fighters all over the world. They research topics of interest and ensure credibility of sources of cancer information. They put patients in contact with proper practitioners in their living area and locate services for them that may benefit their treatment. More information is available at cancercrackdown.org. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Tara and Steve, and I look forward to hearing about your 501c3 foundation, Cancer Crackdown. Now, first, can you tell us how you came to start your foundation?
Yeah, and first of all, thank you, Carl, for having us here. I've been a fan of yours for a very long time as one of the longest known living survivors of lung cancer.
Thank you.
So you are one of our many heroes, and I share your story often when we are working with cancer fighters that are dealing with lung cancer. So you're an inspiration to a lot of people.
I appreciate that.
So Cancer Crackdown started at the end of 2011. unofficially, and at that time I was a pharmaceutical representative and had seen a documentary called Dying to Have Known about the Gerson therapy. Have you heard of that one?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I watched the documentary by chance, and it was about the Gerson therapy and just a therapy for people with late stage cancer to go and do that were actually surviving. So mm-hmm. this was really my first exposure to this. I really had no idea that this was out there, that people had options and places to go once they were considered terminal and in most cases sent home to die mm-hmm. by their conventional doctors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So seeing the documentary was really one of those pivotal moments in my life because it just affected me so much. Just struck a chord of curiosity as for someone in the medical field for a lot of years. My background was, I was actually going to be a pharmacist, so I took a lot of science. So it really struck a lot of curiosity as someone that had done a lot of research. And I started researching, and I think my initial thought was that it would be disproven, that I'm sure there's an explanation. I'm sure that as I dig deeper, I will, find mm-hmm. out that mm-hmm. this is not, as simple as it, word, but it's not mm-hmm. what it seemed.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, quite to the contrary, the more that I researched, the more curious I became, but also really just a lot of emotions, anger, confusion, overwhelmed. Because, as you know, the resources available on the internet now are endless.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I remember there was a pivotal time for me in my research when I kind of stopped and I thought, I'm so confused by what I'm learning. I can't imagine if I had a diagnosis for cancer and I was learning about natural therapies for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not imagine what that must be like especially when you're handed a death sentence, for instance, and you're frantic and you're, making decisions that are life and death. And then you're learning about this for the first time. And there's so much out there. There's a lot of things that are misleading. There's a lot of places that, scare people and tell them, if you don't do this, you're going to die, or use my product, it'll save your life. So it really brought out something in me to help people kind of wade through this mm-hmm. world.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I started a support group on Facebook. And this was when I was still very much involved in my career as a pharmaceutical representative, and just started to connect people that were going through their battle with cancer. And, from there it grew, my passion grew. And I wanted to just devote my time to people that were making this choice to do natural therapies and help them navigate through it and find what works best for them to overcome cancer naturally. So in 2012, I did leave my career, and Steve and I founded Cancer Crackdown together as an organization, and then that's when I started devoting my full-time and then some efforts to Cancer Crackdown. And then Steve joined me full-time just a few months after that, and we've been working hard ever since.
Mm-hmm. It really bothers me when doctors tell patients that they've got 3 months to live or they've got 6 months to live, and I hear that so often from people that get in touch with me, and I tell them that to not pay any attention to this, they mean well, but listen to my story, and I was given that prognosis 41 years ago, and I'm still here. So don't pay attention. It's not a medical diagnosis. It's a God diagnosis, and only God knows when we're going to go. And so it bothers me.
I totally agree.
And I tell people, I wish that doctors would say, well, I'm sorry, but you only have 100 years to live. I would much rather have them say that than that you've got 6 months to live.
Well, and that's so important because I've literally seen this, and we recently lost a cancer fighter to lung cancer, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And he had taken high-dose B17. He was a fan of yours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it spread to the liver. Well, the oncologist didn't want to give him proper testing because he was not doing chemo. Mm-hmm. So he thought that when he went back to the oncologist that he was getting everything checked out. Well, come to find out, it had spread to the liver. He actually got rid of the tumors in the lungs. It went to the liver, and he went to this guy, and he said, "You have 4 months to live." And I could not get, could not undo the damage that doctor did to him because he spent 2 weeks depressed and in fear and lost so much ground. I mean, literally, those statements are damaging. And every time they go to the oncologist, it's like one of them getting into a pool of sharks. I really hate to say that. It's unfortunate, but so many times they call in fear or scared or in doubt, and it's unfortunately very counterproductive.
Well, but, I'll tell you another story, because I believe very strongly in God and in faith and being positive, and what that does is it makes people negative, and it attracts negative results. But I'll tell you something that happened to me recently, and that is I was diagnosed two years ago, December, with atrial fibrillation. And I do take the medication that slows my heart rate, but I take all natural blood thinners and everything. And I also went on a vegan diet because they found that a vegan diet will prevent any further heart problems. And I feel great. But what happened was my doctor told me that when I was first diagnosed that the upper chamber of my heart was very dilated, and that when they did ultrasound about 4 months ago, it had reverted back to the normal size. And she said, "I have never seen that. I have never heard of it. But whatever you're doing, keep doing it." And I said, "I think it's a combination of faith and my vegan diet." And, you know, faith can do things that doctors cannot do. And the reason is that they're discovering the whole field of epigenetics, where your thoughts can even change your DNA, and then the positive thoughts turn on and turn off all of these different genetic things in your body. And so I think that what has been so overlooked for so long, and which I used when I had lung cancer, and that is faith, patience, love, forgiveness, trying to help others, the whole holistic approach to treatment. And doctors do not usually offer that. And so that's, you know, what I find is so important. And as I say, I think that there's been examples in my own life that demonstrate that these things that are now being studied are very effective in healing. And so it makes me sad that someone young that has lung cancer, you know, ends up accepting what the doctor said when it could be changed. It could be reversed very easily with faith and optimism.
Right. Well, and that's certainly a large component. And most of it, especially when we have recurrent cancer fighters that we work with, and a lot of times it's the hardest, the emotional work and the ties feeding the disease. And the hardest part seems to be finding the right fit for the tool to help people to get through that emotional healing. So you got to have lots of options, and that's one of the things that we do. Is there's no one way, it's finding the way for the person, sort of their magic key. But some just don't resonate with the EFT, or they don't resonate with the emotion code. So we're always looking for new avenues and resources in that area. That's for sure. And I listened to a little bit. It sounds like you had several approaches while you were healing for the emotional aspect. Is that correct?
Well, I was in a Search for God group, which helped. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but they're based on the work of Edgar Cayce. And over a 10-year period, he developed three books on called Search for God, and they have chapters on all of the spiritual attributes, and it all revolves around meditation, which is the first chapter, and then you have chapters on patience, forgiveness, love, etc. And people meet in someone's home every week, and they discuss material from the book. They pick disciplines. Like, I remember one time we picked the discipline of not gossiping for a week, which is pretty hard to do. And so then we report back to the group our successes and failures with this. And we meditate. We pick a time to meditate each day that the whole group will be meditating. And then we meditate as a group when we get back to the meeting. And it's very helpful in soul growth. And I was in that at the time. And I also had a close friend that was in my group who made herself available day or night. And that is so important, as you know, to have the support group. Because if you chose the alternative, especially 41 years ago, you didn't have a lot of support. My colleagues, who were all nurses, they were opposed to it. They thought I should go traditional. My mother's attitude.
And the resources now seem so bleak, in that the natural cancer fighters feel so alone. I can't imagine what it was like 40 years ago. That takes a lot of courage.
Right. And so it was great to have Ursula. And Ursula, you know, when I was first diagnosed, she said to me, "I'd like to work with you." She said, "Can we watch our dreams?" And dreams, again, are something I think is very important, because I was diagnosed as a result of a dream.
I remember that story.
And I think that's very important. So Ursula and I watched our dreams, and then she also asked if I would like a psychic reading. And I said, "Well, I've never had one, but what do I have to lose?" So I had the reading, and then we compared all of the notes, and everything confirmed that I should treat it naturally. And so, you know, that was the basis of my decision. But it was many, many years later before I realized why I had gone on that path, and the reason being to help other people and to help bring information on natural ways to more people. I feel like I'm talking too much, Tara.
No.
It's more your interview.
Well, I always say that I'm forever a student, so you just have a lot of years of knowledge, and it's just a rare thing these days. So it's great to hear your stories.
Thank you. Then let's get back to the Cancer Crackdown. Can you tell us then your mission for Cancer Crackdown?
Our mission is to be the trusted source of knowledge regarding natural therapies to defeat cancer and remain cancer-free. And so we really create a partnership with fighters and survivors and even preventers now, supporting and navigating them through their battle. So together we develop a unique plan specific to each individual and instills in them a fearless approach to winning their battle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our mission, and that's really, you know, we have 15 mentors that we work with, different medical doctors, practitioners, chiropractors, and they have been our mentors for our cancer fighters, but also to myself and to Steve, just in this process of going from business people to following our passion in a nonprofit. And they really support us in being able to give the kind of really unique care and partnership to the people that we work with to help them. And it's really all about each person and what will specifically get them to their goal of health and healing.
And your mentors, are they all local, or do you communicate by phone?
They're all over the country, actually. We you know, Bill Henderson is one of our mentors, Ty and Charlene Bollinger, Dr. Majors, Dr. V, you know, we have Robert Scott Bell. There's quite a few, and so they're really located throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically, as mentors, they've just agreed to give us their time with questions, sometimes feedback, and then in the case like with Dr. Newsom, he's up in Idaho, but we work very closely with him and his staff to mm-hmm. give support to our fighters. We partner on phone consultations, help with the follow-up for the fighters as far as the instructions they're given by him. So depending on the mentor, you know, may be different what level of support and involvement, but they're all available to us this, you know, just and the different nuances of what we do.
Great. Good.
So.
Good. And you have two other programs, Surviving Together and Preventing Together. Can you tell me about those?
So the Fighting Together program, of course, is sort of our center program for the cancer fighters. And the Surviving Together program is somewhat similar. It's more for those that have just come through. They do not have a diagnosis. They're cancer-free or however you say that. You know, I know there's a lot of different definitions there, but it's the person that wants to use natural diet or a really healthy cancer-free diet and lifestyle to ensure that they remain cancer-free. And so sometimes the surviving program is people that have done chemo and radiation and are wanting to, you know, clean that out of the body while they transition to this healthy lifestyle. So it depends on the person's situation, but we help if they need consults, if they have issues to deal with lymphedema or neuropathy. There's a lot of things that go on. We help them find what works for them, whether it's an at-home protocol or a local practitioner, or we do a phone consult together. And then the Preventing Together program is similar. It's usually people with health issues that want to make sure that they're doing everything that they can to prevent. A lot of times it's just guidance on blood testing and maybe some diet corrections and some tips or support or navigation on supplements that are important to take. Mm-hmm. So we just really want to be able to appeal and help give anyone guidance that is wanting to enter into this lifestyle of health and being kind of in charge of your own body and your own health overall.
The second part of the interview with Tara and Steve Mann on Cancer Crackdown will be presented at the next show. You will not want to miss this important information. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at holisticcancerfoundation.com.